Welcome in, Eagles fans, to another edition of the Locked On Eagles podcast. Louis DiBiase, as always, joining you on this Tuesday edition of the show, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. What's going on, everybody? Day two here in the first week of the dead period through the NFL offseason. And who knows how long that will stretch out for, as we don't really know when OTAs are going to happen, if there's going to be a training camp. Hopefully there's a, you know, even preseason I would miss if it doesn't happen in August. And, you know, hopefully everything starts on time in September with this pandemic going on. But, you know, we're going to continue no matter what to have you covered right here on Locked On Eagles, 4 to 6 episodes a week downloaded onto your phone or on lockedoneagles.com. And that's why you always got to make sure you subscribe to the podcast and, you know, get those downloaded, because we're going to continue to evaluate this 2020 draft class for the Philadelphia Eagles. And, you know, we're going to have some fun projects coming up on the network over the next couple weeks. So, again, make sure you subscribe on, you know, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, you know, you name it, Google Play. We are available on all platforms. Coming up on today's edition of Locked On Eagles, yesterday, me and Gino took a final look, you know, overall at the 2020 draft class, diving in more so on the day three selections, and I think the Eagles absolutely killed day three. But I've taken a couple more days here to reevaluate the Jalen Hurts pick in the second round, because that is all anybody in the national media now is talking about when it comes to the Eagles. Everybody in the local media, Eagles Twitter. I mean, you would think it would be about Jalen Reagor. Well, you wouldn't think that. It's Philadelphia and it's the NFL. Quarterbacks run the business, and especially in Philadelphia, where backup quarterbacks have gotten so much talk over the last 4 years, it's not surprising at all that Jalen Hurts has taken over headlines. But, you know, it's been the talk of the town. And for me, you guys know, on Friday, on my initial reactions on the Twitter live video, I was not happy. On Friday night's podcast, was not happy about the pick at all. And I feel like most people had that same outrage, which is good, by the way, because I think that shows most Eagles fans are, you know, behind Carson Wentz. The full stands were not the majority. They were the loud minority. But now, over the past couple days, I've noticed, at least on Twitter, a lot of people are coming around to this pick, and either it's through, you know, they really like the rest of the class, and they're using that to justify the Hurts pick. Maybe there's a bit of homerism here with this change of opinion, or maybe other people are just being more objective about it. I'm not saying you're a homer if you like the Jalen Hurts pick now. Actually, maybe some people calm down and actually, you know, listen to Howie Roseman on WIP the past couple of days and, you know, reevaluate it like I did over the weekend. They're actually fans of it now. That's fine, too. I'm not saying you should hate this Jalen Hurts pick. For me, however, I did, because, again, you've seen a lot of people that are using more calm analysis here with the pick, and maybe that's changed their minds. Maybe it hasn't. I wanted to make sure I did that, because Friday, I mean, the blood was boiling. I'll tell you, there was some emotion in that, because that was the last pick I thought Philadelphia would make. I was expecting Christian Fulton, Jeremy Chinn, you know, Joshua Uche, Willie Gay Jr. I had loved how the board fell for Philadelphia on defense. And even at, you know, on offense, if they would have took Matt Hennessy or Jonah Jackson, or I think Lloyd Cushenberry had went, but if you took an interior offensive lineman or even a wide receiver like Denzel Mims, I would have been way more approving of that than the Jalen Hurts pick. So I've thought about it over the past couple of days. I'm still not a fan of it, and it's all for the same reasons. And yeah, I've listened to all the people that like it on Twitter. I have read their analysis. I have listened to Howie Roseman talk over the past couple days and really, like, pound the table for this pick and really go to bat for it. And my reasons stay the same. Each time I try to rationalize it, I instantly squash that rationale. And one of the main reasons has really nothing to do with, you know, the team itself on the field with Carson Wentz. It's just for my own, you know, mental headspace. This week in the media is the exact reason I did not want to deal with this pick, especially with what's going on in the world right now. We have no idea when, you know, live sports are going to come back. So you knew the national media was going to take this story, Wentz versus Hurts. Is Hurts Wentz's replacement? Do the Eagles still believe in Carson Wentz? They were going to take these headlines, and they're going to run with them for months. You've seen it on ESPN. You've seen it on Fox Sports 1, on NBC. Every major national media market is using this. Every podcast, Twitter, the takes are flying. Cowboys fans are loving it. Giants fans, Redskins fans, you name it. The Twitter trolls, the full stands. Like, that was the thing I didn't want to deal with now, is months of this, because I thought we were finally over that when Nick Foles left last year. to Jacksonville, and Carson Wentz takes the Eagles on a playoff run of his own with a practice squad on offense. Like a catastrophic amount of injuries, and Carson Wentz says, F it, I'm carrying us to the playoffs. Does not throw an interception in the final month of the season. They win four straight games, and they win the NFC East. And the main reason was because of Carson Wentz. Like, I thought we were over all of this hot take palooza, these crazy narratives about Carson Wentz after witnessing what we all did last year and the magic that he pulled off. But this Hurts pick, it opens the door to that. And again, I'm not saying the Eagles should base draft picks off of that, but just for my own sake, the reason, one of the main reasons I hated it so much was because now I'm going to have to deal with that. I'm going to have to answer to all this. And I'm actually not going to, though. I have not entertained any of the takes, any of the evaluation on Twitter that questions Carson Wentz's long-term future with the Philadelphia Eagles. And look, I listened to Howie Roseman over the past couple days, but that's the other thing, is like Roseman has had to come on the radio multiple times. He's been on the radio 2 days straight to justify this pick, and I just think that's such a distraction. And even if the team says they don't listen to the outside noise, like, the team listens to the outside noise. So again, I understand them wanting a good backup quarterback, investing in that position. AJ Feely has won huge games for the Eagles. Jeff Garcia has won huge games, including playoff games, for the Philadelphia Eagles. Kevin Cobb, Michael Vick, Nick Foles has won a Super Bowl as a backup for Philadelphia. He won another playoff game the year later and nearly got them to the NFC Championship. I understand wanting a strong quarterback room. It's the most important position in sports. And if your guy gets hurt, there's so many teams that they're useless if their quarterback gets hurt, where their team is not even close to being the same. Whereas the Eagles in the past have not skipped a beat. I understand wanting that. But again, a second round pick brings an expectation and a message to Carson Wentz. Even if they've told him otherwise, if they've told him the truth, even if they don't believe, like, even if Howie Roseman did not make this pick, believing that Carson Wentz can't stay healthy, believing that maybe he's not the future, and that's what Roseman said on the radio yesterday, is that he believes that Carson Wentz is the guy to get him the Eagles' next Super Bowl. He believes that he can envision Wentz being on that podium, hoisting up that Lombardi trophy, and that he wants nothing more than that. I believe them. I do not think, I mean, look, the way they've built around Carson Wentz over the past couple years, you know, surrounding him with the weapons they have. Just look at this draft. I mean, they drafted four receivers that have 4.3 speed, and that's towards his skill set. They paid him a giant contract. They let Nick Foles go. I think this has nothing to do with replacing Carson Wentz, but is having a really good backup, maybe, because again, who knows with Jalen Hurts? Is it worth potentially pissing off your elite 27-year-old quarterback who's dealt with more false narratives, more BS, than any quarterback of his abilities? Anonymous teammates bashing him through the media, backups taking over while he's hurt and leading the team to as much success, if not more. And it sounded like Wentz wanted them to go in another direction with the pick based on what Howie Roseman has said the past couple days, saying it wasn't a comfortable, you know, conversation. He'll just be honest. So to hear all that, is having a strong quarterback room worth that? I'm not so sure. And I'm not saying that they can't have a strong quarterback room if they don't take somebody in the second round. I already think they had one with Nate Sudfeld. I think Nate Sudfeld is a quality backup quarterback. I would have been cool with them spending, you know, a good amount of money on a veteran backup. But to me, again, taking somebody in the second round brings an expectation and a message, because a second round pick is supposed to eventually be a starter. And that's the other thing. Like, I don't believe that that's what the Eagles think about this pick. But that's the other problem, is best case scenario, your 53rd overall pick never plays. And I don't think Carson Wentz is personally, I don't believe he's going to continue to get hurt. If in 2018 the Eagles are 8-5 instead of 6-7, I know he had that back injury, but he was playing through it. If they're 8-5 instead of 6-7, the Eagles made that decision to take Wentz out down the stretch. It wasn't Carson Wentz. So in that scenario, Wentz plays all 16 games that year, probably makes the playoffs, and then we're talking about a quarterback that in 3 of 4 seasons has started in all 16 games. Each injury has been different. I mean, it's not a trend. He tore his ACL, then he fractured his back, then he got a concussion off a cheap shot. Like, those aren't predictive injuries. That it's not a soft tissue injury every single year where it's, oh, Sam Bradford, like, he's torn his ACL 3 times in the past 3 years. That is something that's predictive. That's something that's a trend. You have to get ready for that. You need an insurance policy there. But with Carson Wentz, I don't know. I mean, he played all 16 games last year, and if Jadeveon Clowney isn't the dirty player he is, like, Wentz finishes the season in the postseason. So I'm not someone that says they absolutely need to have the best backup in the NFL. And even if, yeah, having a quality backup is a good thing, and you add that factor with the Taysom Hill role, and we're going to talk to Ross Jackson today, the host of Locked On Saints. We're going to talk to him about that role and what it could do for the Philadelphia offense. Is it a trend moving forward in the NFL? Is it worth, you know, using Jalen Hurts in that role? When you combine having a really good backup, the Taysom Hill role, and potential trade value down the road, the 53rd overall pick still doesn't do it for me. I still don't think they'll ever truly meet that value. I don't take a quarterback in the first two rounds unless your quarterback either sucks and is named Mitchell Trubisky or is 35 years old or higher. Because to me, it's like, again, yeah, having a backup quarterback that's really good is huge. And I think Jalen Hurts is a perfect backup quarterback in the NFL. This is a guy that I'm not sure if he can develop into a franchise quarterback, but he's a gamer, man. Like, you saw him take over for Tua a couple years ago in Alabama after losing the job and in the SEC championship game against Georgia, like, leading Bama to a win and getting them, you know, into the college football playoff. I think Hurts is someone that can do what Nick Foles did for sure and start creating some magic. So it's not the player that I'm hating on. It's just the team, the value they placed on him, and the position. Because, again, I get the value of a backup quarterback more than anybody. But you could have had Jeremy Chinn for 4 years on an inexpensive contract. You could have had Christian Fulton across from Darius Slay. You could have had Josh Uche across from Brandon Graham and Fletcher Cox and Javon Hargrave. You could have had Willie Gay Jr. as your linebacker of the future. You could have moved up in the first round with that second pick for CeeDee Lamb. So there's just, it's just, I think it was an irresponsible draft pick still. I get the rationale. I understand Howie Roseman wanting to continue to add to the quarterback position and to have good options because Wentz has gotten hurt for 3 years. But if this quarterback is not supposed to replace your starter eventually, then I don't think you take that player in the second round. So that's where I still stand with this. That's where I'm going to continue to stand with this. And I know other people are changing their minds, but for me, I just think that with Carson Wentz, a 27-year-old that's elite, you don't take another quarterback in the second round. I do not think it has anything to do with replacing Carson Wentz. Again, they got rid of Nick Foles. They paid Wentz last year. They built around his skill set this year and last year and the year before. They're committed to Carson Wentz. As Howie Roseman said the past couple days, I believe him and Doug Peterson when they say that. And by the way, anyone who thinks Hurts is anywhere close to the player that Carson Wentz is absolutely hilarious. I think the Eagles, why they made this pick, they want to be atop the league with their backup quarterback, they want a potential future trade asset, and they want to get creative with their offense in 2020. So I don't think it has to do with Wentz long term, and that, though, is still, that's the problem, is that you don't make this pick when you have Carson Wentz. So I'm not saying that means you don't invest in backup quarterback at all. You could have took one still in this draft. If you took one in the fourth round, I would have still, like, if you took Jalen Hurts in round four, I probably would have been okay with it still. It doesn't make this draft class awful, but, I mean, to me, I would have went in another direction. I would have signed a veteran. I would have, you know, drafted a guy later on, and I would have committed to Nate Sudfeld. I think Sudfeld can be that really good backup for you if you give him that opportunity, and the Eagles just have not given him that opportunity. And I get it. Sudfeld wants to eventually start somewhere, but then to me, you sign somebody else. You don't take one in the second round. That brings this expectation that sends a message to your quarterback, even if you reiterated to him your belief in him. And it brings all this distraction again that I didn't want. It's a nuisance. It's not something that's going to consume my Twitter feed, you know, all year round. I know what the Eagles have in Carson Wentz, and I'm not going to let the narratives, you know, form a different opinion for me. But it's just annoying to be refreshing your Twitter feed over and over again and seeing this talk. Because I want to talk about Jalen Reagor. I want to talk about what he's going to do for Carson Wentz this year, what Marquise Goodwin could do, John Hightower, Quez Watkins. I want to talk about what a potential steal Kayvon Walls could be and Jack Driscoll. And that's what I'm going to do moving forward on this podcast. But today I just thought, you know, I took a step back, I calmed down, I reevaluated the Jalen Hurts pick, and I still don't like it. For all the same reasons, I still don't like it. Coming up next, we're going to talk to Ross Jackson of Locked On Saints. He knows more than anybody what a two-quarterback offense could mean for the Philadelphia Eagles. Is it worth it? You know, can Hurts do what Taysom Hill does? Is the Taysom Hill role a smart plan for NFL teams moving forward? Is it a trend that's going to stay? Or is it more like read option with RG3 or wildcat with Ronnie Brown? Like, is it something that it's not going to be a focal point of offenses? Press Taylor maybe thinks that it could be a part of the future moving forward. He even said it last year. I'm not convinced, but I want to talk to Ross Jackson about it coming up next right here on Locked On Eagles. All right, Eagles fans, welcome back into another segment right here on Locked On Eagles, a Tuesday edition of the show, and I'm pleased to be joined now by a fellow Locked On host over with the New Orleans Saints. It's Ross Jackson, the host of Locked On Saints. You can follow him on Twitter, at Ross Jackson, N-O-L-A, Ross Jackson, NOLA. Ross, thanks for coming on, man. I thought you'd be the perfect guest to have on as somebody that is very in tune with the New Orleans Saints, a team that features heavily. I mean, of course, they have a Hall of Fame quarterback in Drew Brees, but with Taysom Hill, and actually Taysom Hill just got a new contract last week, I thought you'd be the perfect guy to come in and, you know, kind of tell us what to expect with potentially a 2QB look in 2020 as the Eagles draft Jalen Hurts in the second round. So first off, man, thanks for coming on, and we appreciate talking to you for the first time.
Yeah, absolutely. I can't believe this is our first time actually getting to do something together, but it's like, it's the perfect condition, right? It's the perfect condition in terms of what's going on over there with the draft pick of Jalen Hurts. And I'm excited to talk about this with you, man. I appreciate you having me on.
So what is your, I mean, because the Saints have been doing this now for a couple years, and they have one of the best quarterbacks of all time, but that has not stopped them. And again, even with Jalen Hurts, like, this isn't something I expect to be 100% of the offense all the time Jalen Hurts is going to be on the field, or even, you know, 50% of the time. But the Saints, despite having Drew Brees, I mean, Taysom Hill is featured heavily in that offense, whether it's, you know, I mean, the guy lines up everywhere. He'll play in the slot at receiver on the outside. He'll play running back. He'll line up directly under center. You know, I think what he averages 15 snaps on average per game last year in 2019. Your overall opinion, I mean, as a team that has Drew Brees, are you a fan? Have you been a fan of the Saints, how they've featured Taysom Hill in the offense when you have a Hall of Fame elite quarterback?
Yeah, I really have. I honestly have. And some of it has to do with, well, it's a couple of things, right? You love to see Sean Payton being creative in a way that benefits the team. We've seen him be creative in ways that have been detrimental to the team, of course, but in ways to where you see this type of production continue to get better and better in terms of how Taysom Hill has been involved in this offense. You saw it grow from just a special teams role near the end of 2017, which was actually brought on by, at that time, special teams coordinator Mike Westhoff, who was like, we got to get this guy on the field, and then threw him out to do, you know, punt and kickoff coverage. But, you know, his role has definitely grown within the team. And of course, with the Saints, a little bit of a specific sort of scenario, because you have a guy like Taysom Hill who, as you mentioned, can line up all over the place. He plays, you know, true Y sometimes, even as an inline tight end. He'll play sometimes in the slot as a running back, and then sometimes he'll take snaps under center in addition to the special teams role, which we expect to see knocked down next year. So really, you know, the idea of the two quarterback system with them benefits a bit by his versatility and how he's able to line up all over the field. But the other part of it is that he does get to take some of those quarterback snaps away from Drew Brees. And many people would say, well, why would you want the ball out of Drew Brees' hand? Well, we've seen over the past couple of years a bit of a deterioration of Drew Brees over the course of a season. Wasn't necessarily the case last year because he missed five games earlier in the year, so he had a fantastic December. But when you have a guy like Taysom Hill that can come in and help to run that offense and knows the offense well, it sort of helps to sort of prolong the health and the success of your future Hall of Famer, Andrew Brees, at this point in his career. So that's another reason why I'm a fan of the two quarterback approach for the Saints right now.
Yeah, for sure. And I get that with New Orleans, and especially the situation. And I guess that's why, though, the situation's kind of different, because Drew Brees is, you know, what, is he 40 years old yet?
Yeah, he's going to be going into that 41 area soon.
And that's a quarterback that doesn't provide, you know, a whole lot of mobility. And Taysom Hill, you know, that's just an athlete. Like, he is someone that can run routes at wide receiver. He's got pretty good hands. You know, he can run the football. As you said, you know, he's been on special teams as a gunner. Are my eyes deceiving me? Have I seen him play defense before?
You haven't seen him play defense before.
Okay, I don't
at
know why I thought
point.
That. Maybe he was going after trying to block a punt.
That it's really that part. Like, you don't maybe see him play defense, but you certainly see him make tackles, and a lot of that comes from his role as a gunner in kick coverage and all that. So that translates kind of the same in terms of what that versatility is.
Yeah, so, and that's the thing is, with me, my biggest concern is taking the ball out of the hands of your elite quarterback. And I look, I'm not opposed on having Wentz and Hurts on the field together, and Ertz, you know, with Hurts playing running back, receiver. I saw Dan Orlovsky today kind of drop some possibilities where they can do double RPOs. Doug Peterson loves to use the run-pass options. It was a huge reason they won a Super Bowl in 2017 with Wentz and Nick Foles. But again, what I don't want to see, though, is, you know, at times like what the Saints do, where Taysom Hill is directly under center at quarterback, Drew Brees is either at wide receiver or on the bench. Like, you know, Ross, if Carson Wentz is on the sidelines or he's almost used as like a gimmick wide receiver, almost like the Ravens would use Joe Flacco for when Lamar Jackson will come out his rookie year, that's the part of this plan that I'm a little concerned with, because Wentz is just too good of a weapon, and at 27 years old, the way he can throw on the run,
exactly,
that's where I get nervous, is, okay, if you want to use Hurts around him playing different positions, sure, but we have a problem when Wentz is playing other positions or if he's on the bench. At least that's from my perspective.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's the massive difference between what the Saints do and what many other teams would want to do in a two quarterback system,
right,
is the idea of actually what you're talking about with what other teams would like to do is really have a quarterback and then an athlete, right? So you're talking about that guy that can be the Swiss Army knife, that can be, I don't want to use the phrase gadget, but, you know, that can play all of these different places. We call it a slasher role. And well, not we. I mean, we talked about that back with, you know, Cardale Stewart, for instance, way back in the day. And so it's really that kind of a role that most teams would be most interested in. And certainly you have that in Jalen Hurts, whether or not, I mean, the big thing is whether he's willing to do it. But, you know, look, if it's going to get you your check in the NFL, then you're going to be willing to do it. You know what I mean? And then the other guy that really intrigues me with all that, too, is Khalil Tate, who I know that got brought into Philly. I know he's transitioning over to wide receiver. But yeah, there's a couple of different options in terms of how to possibly be able to get that involved and get that sort of extra piece involved in the offense there.
And don't get me wrong, Ross, I do think that, you know, having multiple guys on the field at the end, and by the way, don't forget, too, the Eagles have Greg Ward, who was a former quarterback out of the University of Houston, who stepped up huge at wide receiver the last 4 weeks of the season last year. So they've got, four potential guys that can throw the football on offense that can play other positions. And I do think it does provide an advantage. I mean, the Eagles have one of the most famous plays in NFL history in the Super Bowl, the Philly special, where they had a tight end who was a former quarterback throwing the football to a quarterback in Nick Foles for a touchdown on fourth and goal to regain the lead against the New England Patriots, probably the greatest dynasty in NFL history. So I do get the advantage. I do wonder, though, Ross, if, you know, because you see the Saints do it. You see the Baltimore Ravens did it in 2018, getting Lamar Jackson out there. You see the Eagles potentially talking about using Hurts at multiple positions. The Eagles actually did this, too, in 2009 when they brought Michael Vick back into the NFL fresh out of jail. Donovan McNabb was still there and Kevin Cobb, but there would be packages for Vick each week where, you know, it wasn't as successful as, like, Taysom Hill was with New Orleans last year, but the Eagles even have used this in the past. I do wonder if it's a, I don't want to call it a gimmick, but I wonder if this is more going to be the, I don't know. I mean, read option is still used, but it was like a huge part of the, it was the Washington Redskins offense in 2012. The Ronnie Brown, Ricky Williams Wildcat in 2008 with the Miami Dolphins. Do you think it's more going to be in those kind of trendy, you know, packages? Or is this more like, trying to think of a good comparison, but like mobile quarterbacks, like teams in the league now, they want their quarterbacks to be athletic. Defenses, they want to use now 6-7 defensive backs at a time. There's no more traditional linebackers almost in the NFL. Do you think it's more going to be something that stays as like a trend that becomes like a way of life in the NFL, or is it more something that you're going to see in a couple years, maybe not use anymore?
Yeah, I think that it's something that you kind of have to look at as a middle of the road, in that some teams, some franchises, and some organizations will absolutely continue to stick with it if they can find a way to make it work. And the reason why I mention that is because you look at the New Orleans Saints with their draft this year. They traded back into the draft to grab Tommy Stevens out of Mississippi State, formerly at Penn State as well. They grabbed him 6'5", 237-pound quarterback while at Penn State, who also caught 14 catches and also ran for 12 touchdowns while throwing, I think it was 15 touchdowns on 121 completions throughout his entire career with Mississippi State and Penn State. So for the Saints, it looks like they're very intent on, even when they, if they eventually end up shifting Taysom Hill indeed to the, you know, number one quarterback role, to where that's his focus, of still having that type of slasher role out there in a guy like Tommy Stevens. And so I think there are going to be some teams that are very much into the idea of including it and incorporating it in their offense. You can sort of compare that to teams that haven't teams that have completely made the shift over to more versatile running backs. And I don't mean just running backs that can catch out of the backfield. I mean running backs that can line up in the slot, running backs that can line up out wide. And so, you know, you see that more often with some organizations than you do with other, as opposed to other trends that really found their way, like, let's say, the swing guard tackle that can play both of those positions for security's sake, but also as an additional jumbo tight end if you need, like, that kind of an idea. And so I think that's a little bit more where this might go in terms of finding places where there will be some teams that really love it if they can make it work. The big thing is making it work. And there's a lot of different ways to do it. We see one example with the Saints. We've watched a bunch of other teams really try. We saw Nick Fitzgerald with Tampa Bay last year. Easton Stick ended up with the Chargers in their draft. I think he was a fifth rounder for them. Right. Even Trace McSorley, who also went to Baltimore last year. And so they tried to continue it, what they tried to start with Lamar Jackson and Joe Flacco.
Yeah, and I don't
those
know
those examples didn't really work out, but there are other examples of where it might.
For sure. And I think where it does work out is when you see a guy like, you know, again, because it didn't work out in 2009 with Vic and McNabb because neither one has ever played another position. Whereas with the Saints, I mean, Taysom Hill, like I said, I mean, he can run routes. He can actually catch the football really well. He's good run after the catch. I mean, he's a good runner. So that's an athlete. I do agree with you that it really will probably depend on team-by-team situation and personnel. I don't think it's going to become like a focal point of all NFL offenses down the road where you're always going to have two guys that can throw the football. But the Eagles quarterback coach, Press Taylor, even said last year that he does think moving forward in the NFL, you're going to see a lot of offenses that not require but really desire multiple guys that can throw the football. And I do think there is an advantage. So I'm not someone here that's trying to say, again, I don't love it. I don't love the idea. I think the Eagles offense, that's not what they needed. I think what they need was just health and Carson Wentz getting help at wide receiver to get back to where they were in 2017. But I will say, though, I think Jalen Hurts is somebody that, you know, he is an athlete. He is someone that is a really good runner. You've seen him catch footballs at Oklahoma and Alabama. So if somebody could replicate what Taysom Hill did, I don't hate Jalen Hurts in that role.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. And that's going to be the biggest thing is how quickly can he translate those other skills into an NFL game plan for Philadelphia. I think that's going to be sort of the biggest part of all this, because if you want to run a successful two quarterback system, what that has been shown in New Orleans is that you're not just looking at guys that are going to come in. And, you know, the biggest danger you can run into is Jalen Hurts hits the field and the defense knows exactly what he's going to do and what the team wants to do with him. That's the biggest danger that comes with something like this, much like the tandem running back role as well. Court is sort of the same kind of idea. So if you can develop Jalen Hurts in a way that is representative of what Taysom Hill has been developed into as somebody that you don't necessarily know what he's going to do on the field anymore. There was a little while to where you knew if they ran, you know, a zone read or whatever, he's keeping the ball.
Yeah, no, that's
so true.
There was
a time where he was absolutely going to do it.
I remember. I remember going back 10 years ago. I've used that 2009 comparison. I remember the reason that really didn't work is because there was no creativity to it whatsoever. When Michael Vick was under center, you knew it was a QB draw right up the A gap or B gap or on the outside. So that's that's my other concern. Like, if you're going to do this, then again, it's not Carson Wentz, you know, playing wide receiver and not moving. I mean, that doesn't provide any sort of trickery or any, you know, deceiving looks whatsoever. If you're going to do this, it's got to be the way the Saints do it, where I feel like the more and more they use Taysom Hill, it got more and more creative. And that's where I'm not a huge fan of it, but if you're going to do it, like, I love the idea of a double RPO where Hurts is at running back and Wentz either keeps it or he hands it off, and if Hurts keeps it or grabs the football, then he has the ability to throw the football. So it's got to be multi-dimensional.
Yeah, absolutely. And you can't tip the hat, you can't tip the hand before the play unfolds, which is the big part. So as long as he can develop that multi-dimensionality, that's going to be the key to a successful sort of 2QB quote-unquote offense.
All right, Ross, thank you so much for your insight. I mean, I thought you were perfect to have on the show today for this, because you are covering the Saints for Locked On Saints, and it is the team that has actually done this very successfully over the past couple of years. And again, not sure if this is going to be a new trend in the NFL that sticks. But the Eagles, look, Jalen Hurts, as much as I don't love the pick, he is a member of the Philadelphia Eagles now. So how can you best utilize him? And if they can use him in a way where he is as productive as Taysom Hill, then okay, I feel better after talking to you.
Oh, good, good. No, I'm glad. I mean, it is a very sort of specific and unique situation, and it's new. It's new for all of us because we're finally seeing this role enter a scope in the NFL to where it's A, desirable, because for a little while teams wanted nothing to do with that kind of an idea, and now we're starting to see sort of what the formula for success is within it. So it's going to be a very interesting time, particularly over the next couple of years, while other teams continue to try to develop it, while the Saints continue to be, I can say that they're at the forefront of it in, yeah, in today's game, you know what I mean? But of course, this existed far before. We've given so many examples of where this idea has been before, and so I don't want to take too much credit for the Saints, but certainly they're at the forefront of its development in today's game, and it'll be interesting to see how it continues to build, especially with the potential of Taysom Hill shifting to the potential QB1 in the future, depending on how they feel after Drew Brees retires. And then so what do they do in terms of involving him, and do they give him another quarterback as well? Lots of questions. So it's interesting time, man, for sure.
Well, that's the thing, Ross, too, to wrap up is, again, the situations are different. With the Saints, you know, this is a 40-year-old quarterback that's probably going to retire, if not this year, the year after. And that's why, like, even when they traded a third-round pick for Teddy Bridgewater a couple years ago, and you saw that payoff in a huge way last year, like, don't get me wrong, Philadelphia, of all teams, knows the benefit of having a backup quarterback that's really good.
Sure.
I just think, again, you look at, like, the Saints versus the Eagles, the Eagles have a 27-year-old quarterback that I know has had injuries the past couple years, but he, to me, is an elite 27-year-old quarterback, and that's why I think the situations are different. So I want a good backup, but it's not even that I didn't not like the pick because that Taysom Hill role could come. It's more so the expectation that comes with a second round prospect.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And it's a really interesting sort of development for all of you that are covering the team and that are following the team and everything. And, like you mentioned, it's a very, very different scenario for the Saints, because as far as I'm concerned, the Saints benefit from seeing Taysom Hill out on the field throwing the football at this point, because it gives them a glimpse into what their potential future is with Taysom Hill at quarterback. Philadelphia Eagles don't have to worry about that as much. So even if they do find a way to develop this, it could be still at a lesser perspective and a lesser role for Jalen Hurts, still allowing him to be. Because that's the other big part with this. And the biggest concern that also comes along with this is that you have a second quarterback that's uber involved in the offense in different roles. You have to be concerned about what if that player gets hurt, as opposed to just what if the starting quarterback gets hurt, because that's also your insurance policy and your safety plan if, you know, your starting guy gets hurt. So where do you find what the position is as a backup quarterback more important? Is it the insurance policy or is it the offensive weapon? And so that's a balance you have to play all the time.
Yeah, that's a very good point. And I think from the Eagles' perspective, I think the pick was more about having a good backup. But I do think having the benefit of him potentially being your Taysom Hill, I think that did play a part of it. Ross Jackson giving us some awesome insight. He is the host of Locked On Saints. You can follow him on Twitter, at Ross Jackson NOLA, at Ross Jackson NOLA. Ross, hopefully we're talking down the road. Who knows when the Eagles and Saints will find each other teaming up or matching up against each other again. So awesome first time having you on the show, man, and hopefully we can do it again down the road.
Yeah, absolutely, man. I look forward to that. Thank you very much for welcoming me on. Y'all do fantastic work. I'm listening to y'all all the time.
Thank you, man.
And you know, hey, I'm over here covering the Saints, and I still love tuning into y'all's show. So thanks for everything that you do and all your work, and I appreciate you having me here.
Appreciate you, man. Thank you. All right, everybody, welcome back into Locked On Eagles, segment 3 of this Tuesday edition of the show. Once again, thanks to Ross Jackson joining me, a member of the Locked On family. He is the host of Locked On Saints. And again, the Taysom Hill role is just one factor of this Jalen Hurts draft pick. It was only one element to it. I don't think it was the main reason Philadelphia drafted him. I don't even think it was the second key reason. You know, I think having a quality backup for Carson Wentz, I think them just wanting to invest in quarterback and always having a strong room, those were the primary reasons. And I also think, you know, having a trade asset down the road was also a key reason. But Hurts being an athlete, having pretty good hands actually for a quarterback, having really good running ability with such a creative offense, I think that was, a definite recruiting piece here. And I think that that's something that could be a part of Philadelphia's offense next year. Do I want it to the point of, you know, like Taysom Hill, where he's getting 15 snaps a game on that Saints offense? I don't want Hurts out there 15 times a game, but if you can sprinkle him in there and get a little creative, I don't hate the idea. Again, as long as it's in a way that, you know, Ross was describing, as Dan Orlovsky has described, where Hurts is the one playing around Carson Wentz. It's not Carson Wentz not being at quarterback, where he's getting lined up at receiver or running back or being on the sidelines. That's when it will bother me, because Wentz is such a weapon in his own right at 27 years old. He's not Drew Brees. He can run as good as Jalen Hurts. He is incredible when it comes to passing on the run. So as long as they use this in a responsible, constructive, creative way, then I'm cool with it. Again, I'm not a fan of the pick for all the reasons I said in segment one, but I think Ross did make me feel better about what this could be in 2020 moving forward. All right, before we wrap up the show, just some news to get into. The Eagles have placed the fifth-year option on defensive end Derek Barnett. It's going to cost the Eagles a little over $10 million in 2020. I think this was a necessary move, and you guys have heard my opinions on Derek Barnett so far this offseason. As you guys know, I was a big proponent of bringing in an edge rusher, another edge rusher with a lot of explosiveness, good bend, you know, first step quickness. I want a pass rush specialist that can, you know, you can rely on to get you like 8 to 10 sacks a game, where, yeah, maybe his floor is a little bit lower, but his ceiling is really high, because you have an elite defensive end in Brandon Graham. I think Derek Barnett's a very safe starter, right? Where he's really good against the run. He can get you, like last year, you know, 6.5 sacks, but does he have that next step to take? I don't know if he does. And that's why I think it was necessary to place the fifth-year option on him, because in 2020, you do want to see if he can take that next step, because I think he's done enough to keep that starting job and to stay, you know, another year. But he also, though, the reason I wanted a Daryl Taylor or a Joshua Uche or a Terrell Lewis or even a Clavon Chaisson was because I don't think Barnett has done enough to convince me or the Eagles, clearly, moving forward, that he is like the new defensive end one when Brandon Graham moves on, or that he should always be an unquestioned starter on this defense. Like, does Derek Barnett deserve a long-term contract? I think he's a good starter. Again, really good against the run. Last year, he had 6.5 sacks. He was having a breakout sophomore campaign in 2018 before he got hurt. I thought last year he consistently got to the quarterback. He should have had more sacks. But at the same time, is there that other level that's going to justify him being a top 15 pick where he's going to get 10 to 15 sacks in a season? Is he capable of that? I'm not so sure. Like, is he worth a giant contract? I don't, not yet, certainly. So I'm glad that they didn't move on totally, but I'm also glad that they haven't signed him to a long-term deal yet, because you never know. I mean, look what happened last year with Nelson Aguilar. You pay him $9.5 million for only a year, and he totally flames out. So with Derek Barnett, I don't think that same thing's going to happen. Yeah, is $10 million a lot to pay Barnett in 2020? Yes, it is, for sure. Like, that's a big cap hit next year. But I think he has done enough where he's owed that year to, you know, it's kind of like, it's not a make or break season, because I think you could get him on a deal that's, you know, pretty good. It's not, you know, they're not overpaying for him in 2021. If he has like another six sack season, I think you could, you know, keep him moving forward. But I want there to be, I don't know, I'm thinking that there's more to be desired with Derek Barnett. And if I can get a guy that, like Clavon Chaisson, where the sky is the limit and he can get me 10 to 15 sacks in a season, then I'm not going to commit huge money to Derek Barnett. And that doesn't mean I don't want Derek Barnett in the future as my, you know, defensive end too, because again, you know, it's not just Barnett and his future the Eagles need to consider. It's Brandon Graham. Brandon Graham is over 30 years old now, and while he's still at the height of his abilities, I mean, last year with 8.5 sacks, that was one of Graham's best seasons as a pro. But, you know, 2-3 years down the road, what is he going to be? And that's why there's still a lot of work to be done here on the edge. I wish they would have taken one in this draft earlier than the seventh round, but the Eagles seem committed to seeing through the development of Derek Barnett, of Josh Sweat, and of Jannard Avery. All right, that's going to do it for today's edition of Locked On Eagles. Thank you so much for tuning in. Be sure to subscribe on the podcast on any platform or on LockedOnEagles.com. And we're always talking birds on Twitter, at DiBiaseLOE and at Gino_LOE. Louis DiBiase here signing off. As always, thank you for downloading, thank you for listening, and let's go Birds.